Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
My name's Marty, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for being here tonight on Game 7 of the NBA Finals. I consider just calling the play-by-play on my phone here and just, like, telling you guys what was going on. But instead, I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm really grateful to Julie for asking me to do this. Jack, thank you for all your service. It's been months that you've been doing this, and I'm sure the group really appreciates it, so thank you. And to everyone else, all the other people that set up coffee, I drink it all the time. And it's delicious. I have more than one cup usually. So I know it's a thankless job, so thank you for doing that. Where to begin? I guess I'll begin at the beginning. My sobriety date is August 2nd, 2014. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, but even better, my sponsor kind of looks like Bill Murray, which is awesome. Because he's also, like, really wise and has a lot of like, good advice to give, and he's been a great help for me. He's helped me as I sponsor other men as well, so pretty fortunate. I have a home group. I go to meetings. It's great. So, well, you know, my father's an alcoholic, right? I was born to an alcoholic, and he was born an alcoholic, too. I think that, as I said earlier, the force is pretty strong in us, you know. Probably the dark side was a little bit stronger, though. And, you know, I was born and, you know, probably inherited, you know, the gift or the curse, depending on how you look at it. So I was raised in an alcoholic household. My father was verbally and emotionally abusive all throughout my youth. Around the time I was 11, my mom decided to divorce my dad, and things really changed. That was around the same time that I had my first drink. It was Franzia box wine. My mom had this box in the fridge that she would just, I don't know, it was great. It tasted, like, just sweet enough to drink. So. And then, take it from there. I'm sure you guys have all heard the sort of drunkalogue about, I love drunkalogues, by the way. So if you, like, tell your drunkalogues, but I won't tell too much of mine, but I just hit the bottle, you know, weed, alcohol, anything to sort of escape my reality of my parents' divorce. You know, my mom met this new guy. Who's this new guy? And this guy's coming down. He's all friendly and nice. I'm like, man, I don't like you. Don't be nice. Don't be friendly. I'm trying really hard to not like you. And he kept that up for years and years. And finally, he just, like, wore me down. He's like, can I marry your mom? And I was like, oh, yeah, go ahead. You can do it. Fine. So my mom remarried. But, yeah, he's a great guy. He's not an alcoholic, and neither is my mom. So anyways, I just, you know, blossomed into drinking in high school. And in college, as I say, you know, drinking was a sport, and I was an athlete. I was, you know, a competitor. I wouldn't let my team down, and I didn't. I was really good at it. Very competitive. I knew, well, yeah, anyways. I got into a lot of trouble in college. I almost flunked out. I actually found a letter that said, Martin, you're going to, like, in so many, you're going to flunk. Like, we're going to kick you out. Your grades are so low that, like, if you don't get them better, we're going to kick you out. At that point, I sought help, you know, I sought the medical sort of excuse, and I got it. I was able to stay in by the skin of my teeth and keep going. And I kept drinking. I managed to graduate and got a job and, you know, kind of settled into the sort of, like, this is life as an American adult. Like, this is it. This is, like, the you know, the hour-long commute. You know, the bills that are sometimes late, sitting on the couch watching the show. This is not like, oh, man, this sucks. And then at that point, I sort of came to terms with my gift or my curse. I realized that, well, how did my dad deal with this? Like, not his dad deal with this. This kind of sucks, being, you know, being engaged, having a girlfriend, and being, like, loyal and all that stuff. Like, I don't want to do that. Like, this is boring. So I drank. Drinking was the cure. Drinking was the solution. Drinking, I learned from my dad, drinking is how a man is a man. You know, that's just how he deals with life as being a husband and a father. It's sort of your salvo. It's sort of like what you get in exchange for the sacrifices that you make. There's this thing called learned helplessness, which is a term I learned in college and I just barely know, but it is pretty much what it sounds like. Animals and humans tend to learn when they're in a stressful situation and they can't control it. They just tend to learn that, like, this is how it is and this is how I'm going to be. And they don't do anything to change anymore because everything they try hasn't worked. They learn helplessness. And looking back on my experience as a child and the traumatic sort of environment of my youth, I definitely was, you know, that dog in a cage, sort of just getting electrocuted, not having any control. I had no control over the traumatic events of my youth, and I learned helplessness. I learned that no matter what I did, it wouldn't stop. And I think that attitude carried me into my adulthood. I finally bought in. I was like, this is it. No matter what I do, I'm not going to stop. I'm just going to drink. This is how it's going to be, like my father and my father before me. I learned helplessness, and I just exhibited that for years and years. I don't know how I managed to get, I got a master's degree, sort of changed careers. I just drank my way through all of that. Eventually, things started getting more and more adult, and my wife was like, we need to have a kid. We need to start a family. I was like, no. I thought I had a few more years. That's not really my attitude, but it kind of was. No guy will admit that, by the way. So my wife was 6 months pregnant, and I hit my bottom. My bottom was relatively high. But let's just say, like, involved a toilet bowl, like a piece of a toilet bowl, and there was something at work. It was at work. Got demoted. Probably gonna get fired. You know, the next day, you know, my wife, who had finished picking me up, drunk and on someone's kitchen floor, like 6 months pregnant, she kind of looked me in the eye and she gave me that look like, I'm out of here. Like, I'm gone. Like, I'm out here and listen, you know, and that, I've never seen that look in her eyes before. And, that was my bottom. That was it. I Googled Chicago AA because I lived in Chicago at the time. I Googled Chicago AA. I found a meeting and I went to it and it was awesome. I thought it'd be really bad. I thought it'd be like Vietnam vets, you know, like Korean War vets or whatever, like, and there's smoke, and there's, like, a fluorescent light, and it's kind of, there's, like, a fan, you know. I thought it'd be really bad, but it was not. It was really good. It was kind of like this. Everyone looked really happy and awesome and, like, good. Like, it was a great crowd, and I was like, man, I'm the Korean War vet. Like, I'm the guy, the fluorescent light. Get this, it's me. These people are awesome. And that was it. That was the beginning of a 5-year-long journey without alcohol. I've had a lot of friends and sponsors. The fellowship of the program has been awesome, really awesome. There's a lot of guys in here that I've called or texted, just kind of like, hey, man, Hail Mary. You know, I'm not saying that, of course. I'm not saying, oh, man, I'm having a crisis right now. It's like, what's up, dude? You know? What's going on? But, you know, they know what's up. Thinking about the program now, I should mention my relapse, by the way. I hate it. I hate my relapse. I wish I had a good relapse story. It's so bad. Like, I kind of wish I relapsed and, like, did all this bad stuff. But I didn't. I smoked weed one day 2 years ago. I don't know why. I just did. I got high. I did yoga. That's it. I went to bed. That's it. That's all I did. And my sobriety date's now what it is. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of that, but I still have some work to do. I'm really proud of not having drank alcohol for more than 5 years. Not drinking alcohol has been the reason why I have so many things in my life. I stopped drinking at first because I was going to lose my daughter. You know, I wasn't going to get a chance to be a dad. I wasn't going to get a chance to raise my kid. I could see it in my wife's eyes. And it worked. I stopped drinking, and I got a chance to be a father. I got, like, a way better job. I moved across the country. It's like cash and prizes. Like, all the, I mean, basically, this whole time it was like, oh, you're just about the cash and prizes. It's not about the cash and prizes. It's not. It's really not. But if there are, I will take them. Like, I will take them and keep them. And, like, this is good, right? Because, like, I'm sober. So I'm not ashamed of that. I'm not ashamed of being successful, and being sober is a part of being successful. It's actually necessary for me. I stopped drinking, and I was able to keep my family together. This program saved my life. It not just saved my life, but it made it better. So, like, I don't know, that's a pretty good pitch to me. Even if you're not alcoholic, like, why not just do this? So it's been really good. Now I think back on learned helplessness, right? I think back and I say, am I that dog? And, yeah, I still am. I have that traumatic experience, that traumatic event where I was getting shocked and there was nothing I can do to control it. But I was able to observe people just like you, share their experience, strength, and hope. I was able to see you turn your life around, and I learned. I learned optimism. I learned that there is a lever I can press. There is something I can do to get out of this. So I still have the shocks every day. I'm getting shocked all the time. I'm a really sensitive guy. So anything bothers me. I still have the shocks all the time, but I can push the lever. I can stop. You know, I can push. There's a button I can push. And sometimes it's literally buttons, like the dial button on my phone, you know? Call a guy in a program. Go to a meeting. Call my sponsor. Think about someone else. Write down what I'm grateful for. Try to label my anxiety and feelings. Be with others. I mean, there's so many things I can do. There's so many levers and buttons I can press. And I learned that all here. I learned that as a part of this program. I'm really grateful. My daughter wrote a letter. I was going to show it. My daughter wrote a letter to me for me today. It's her first ever sentence. And I'll preface this by saying my daughter's not, like, gifted or, you know, super above average. Maybe she's, like, average, maybe a little above. So, but I'm really proud of her. She wrote me a letter for Father's Day today. And, you know, I'll just preface this by saying, like, there's so much I wish was better about my life. Even my daughter. Like, sometimes I wish my daughter, like, I want a bigger house, I want a better car, you know, I want more money, you know, my wife, you know, blah, 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 all these things, and it includes my daughter. But, you know, working the sixth and seventh step, you know, just being able to pray to remove these defects of character, and that self-pity, right? Why is my life like this? Why is my self-pity? It's a defect of character, and I pray to remove those. Anyways, my daughter wrote me this letter. And it says, Dad, I love you. Love. L-O-V. So she misspelled love. But I still love her. And so I think that's the message. Love people even though they can't spell. Probably some of you can't spell either. Sorry. I'm just kidding. I'm really grateful to have the opportunity to share. This program saved my life. I'll say that any day, every day, all the time. You can ask me how, and I'll give you, like, a lot more details. If you're looking for a sponsor, come talk to me. Open to sponsoring, guys. There's a lot of sobriety and wisdom in this room, and I'm really grateful to be able to share. I've learned a lot from the men and women in this room. Thank you so much.
Amy Alcoholic. okay, so I told myself two things to remember when I get up here. Don't trip on my purse and don't trip up the stairs. I've accomplished this. I'm good. So I have a sobriety date, May 27, 2004. I have a sponsor. I sponsor people. Don't have a home group yet because I'm just waiting to see what my work schedule is going to be like. But I have a couple meetings that I go to every week because I just love them. I don't know. I was actually at the chair meeting this morning, so I was talking a little bit about, you know, what it was like. And then I was sitting in the chair and I was listening and I was like, oh my God, I forgot how uptight I was before I started drinking. I was like, I had a brother and he had some friends, Matt and Daniel, and they would go, it was my mom's best friend's kids, they would go and play and do all these things. And I remember being just so uptight. And I just like, I'm so grateful I'm not like that anymore because it was really hard being like that. But you know, I basically like was given everything in the world to succeed. My parents were non-alcoholics. Their parents had some alcoholism in there. But my parents, they, you know, born again Christians, brought us to church, told me things like, okay, honey, you know, we're, you know, we can't afford to send you to any school, but what you can do is you can get good grades, you can get scholarships, and you can be whatever you want to be. Honey, what do you want to be? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to be a pediatrician. And so I was a little girl, and I got all the straight A's, and I got all the trophies. And, oh, I'm sorry. I remember I would not get, like, one trophy. And, you know, back to the me being uptight, this was very upsetting for me. And I had, like, a little shelf in my room, and I like, always remember, like, my arch nemesis. And she wasn't an arch nemesis. She was a very sweet girl. but she would get that one trophy, and it was like, you know, and I couldn't handle it, you know. And so I kind of saw that, like, what's the point of this stuff, you know? If I can't be the very best, I'm not going to do it at all. And I started, like, questioning life at about that time, probably at about 12 years old. So I didn't get the whole life thing, you know. And I know that a lot of little girls, they grow up and they want the picket fence and to get married and have kids. And that's probably really normal, but I didn't get that. Like, so I was clearly, there was something different about me because I was like, I don't want that. You know, I don't want to be like the herded cow going to work. You know? And so I just, like, I started cutting myself on a regular basis because I'm like, I don't get life. You know, this is the only thing that makes me feel. And so I'm really grateful I found alcohol because I was like, woo, I don't have to cut myself anymore. Those were my exact thoughts. And so I started drinking. You know, when you're in high school, it's easier to get other substances. So, of course, I did that. And I drank when I could. And from the time I started drinking, though, people would say things that were really weird. I never quite understood it. But, like, me and my friend Alicia would split a six-pack, and I would always drink one more than her. And she would say things like, Amy, you drink to get drunk. And when you say things like that to an alcoholic, you're like, wait, what? I mean, what other reason is there to get to drink? I don't understand this. So she would say that, and I'm like, okay. So I'm just gonna get some new friends. And so I very much, you know, I loved just getting out of myself. You know, I loved the fact that it turned my head off. I love, you know, that peace that you got. You just shut your thinking off completely. Because, like I told you, I was the most uptight little kid. And I loved it, you know. So whatever did it faster, by the end of school, high school, I was doing everything. I barely graduated. My parents, they didn't really, of course, they didn't like this. And they said things like, either you go to school or pay rent. And I thought that's insane in my house, but technically it's their house. So I decided to do some school. And so I did the local school, but I was, you know, partying, drinking so much that I failed out of that one. And people are calling me all sorts of names that are kind of coming true. And so I started to see that, I ended up totaling my car. Best thing that ever happened to me. The guy who took my x-rays, he calmed me down. I asked him questions. Found out it's like minimal amount of school for a decent living. So I'm like, all right, I can do this. But I knew I had to get away from New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey. Don't hold it against me. I know there's parts of my state that are ugly. I get it. I grew up down by the shore, ergo no accent. So I knew I had to get away from New Jersey. I moved down to Florida. I go to school down there. And I got busy with school, with clinicals, with work. And, you know, there's a thing about us alcoholics. We can stay sober when we're busy. But was I happy? No. You know, and I didn't know that until I was done with school. Once I was done with school, oh, and by the way, your brains come back when you start using them again, because I did very well in school. And at first, I'm like, oh, my God, I got to do more school. This is great. And but then once school was done, I started getting restless, irritable, and discontent. And so what happened was I didn't know it was me. I didn't know, like, oh, Amy, you feel this way because you haven't had a drink in your system. No, I thought it was the state of Florida, the bugs, the humidity, the people, the way they dress. So I'm like, I got to get out of Florida. So I go back to New Jersey. I'm like 20 years old at this time. I forgot. Before I moved back to New Jersey, I had a temporary job out in Seattle, actually. I worked in Swedish Ballard for about 3 months. And I remember, funny thing, I remember when I lived out here, obviously I was 20. I always looked like I was 15 when I was 20, so I couldn't get a drink or anything like that. And so I was working, and every weekend I would do things like go out to the Olympic Peninsula. And I remember thinking, like, if I could just live in a beautiful place like this, I could stay sober. And then I moved back to New Jersey. But I did move back, and, you know, there's like the geographic here. When you're first there, it's probably about a honeymoon period, about 3 months. And so I felt really good when I moved back there, because I had been in Florida, and then so now I got the fall, the rustling of the leaves, and I'm just on cloud nine, and it's fantastic. But pop, you know, all of a sudden that's gone, and once again I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. But at that time I had friends that were all 21 and older, and I grew up in Lakewood, so we had a bar that you could drink in underage, and it was fantastic, and I loved it. I felt like I had arrived, you know, like Bill talks about in the Big Book, and, you know, I felt like, okay, work during the day, drink at night, but of course, by the time I turned 21, my drinking really got out of hand. I very quickly needed a substance to control and enjoy my drinking, and that really got bad, and they don't, you know, I was out to all hours of the night, and so I found another substance that got rid of my drinking problem altogether. And I was so delusional, of course I won't go into detail, but I was so delusional that I thought, like, well, my grandpa is an alcoholic, I'm just going to do this. You know, I was high functioning, I would go to work. I wasn't that high functioning, because I would go to work anywhere from 5 minutes to 5 hours late. So after about a year of working there, when I went to give them my notice, because I decided to make a career change, my friend Jessica was making about double the amount of money on a bad day. So I was like, okay, I'm going to start working with my friend Jess. And so I put in my notice, and they're like, that's okay, you can leave today. So they were happy with my departure. So I start working with my friend Jessica, and, you know, she's stealing for a living, but it's okay, because I'm not stealing from my mom and my dad. I'm stealing from corporate America. Nobody likes corporate America. You know, and the doctor's opinion talks about how we live lives of complete delusion. That's me. And so I'm doing this for about a year, and then I start getting so skinny. You know, you need, like, a label to see if I'm coming or going, you know. My hair's falling out in clumps, and I start getting arrested. And, you know, people are telling me things like, you know, you should just stick to drinking. So I do what I do. I run away to my parents down in Florida. I tried drinking when I was down there. I was with my brother, and I was cursing out Fort Lauderdale bars for having steps, which is, like, seriously. So I'm like, drinking's bad, because what happens with me is I have trouble controlling the amount, and you know, I can't say, oh no, I've had enough. I don't know who people are anymore. No, I have to, like, I'm like a pig, you know, and So, like, I gotta stay away from the drinking. I remember being so hungover to help my mom pick out a puppy. And I'm like, oh, drinking's not for me. So, once again, I'm down in Florida. After about 3 months, I get restless, irritable, and discontent. And so I think that, once again, I'm in Florida. It is Florida. I have to move back to New Jersey, but I'm smart now. And somebody suggested I go to a meeting. But I'm like, oh, no. That's where people go to complain about their problems. I've been to meetings. They don't keep you sober. And so I'm like, besides, I'm intelligent. I'm going to learn about my disease, and I'm going to write a book and teach everybody how to be sober. And they say that the more intelligent you are when you come in these rooms, it's actually a burden, and they are right. So I basically, this is what I thought. I thought one of the things that I needed was to live with friends and family, and I did. I moved into this wonderful place. We lived right on the bay. We took boats everywhere. It was amazing. Like, you know, when you wake up in the bays right in the backyard, I mean, the light hitting the water, I mean, it looks like diamonds. It's absolutely gorgeous. I'm sure you guys have seen it on the Puget Sound. It's amazing. And to wake up to that every day, and I lived with these friends of the family, it was absolutely amazing. They drank, I didn't, and it wasn't a big thing. And, but after probably about the greater part of a year, my mind just changed. It wasn't anything different. They had offered me a beer a bazillion times before, but my mind told me, you know, my mind changed, and I had, you know, I have to. The sun was setting, it was a barbecue, and it occurred to me that it's sacrilegious not to drink a beer at a barbecue. And so I did. And it wasn't a big deal. I had a good time. Next day, I didn't even want to drink. I'm like, oh, my God, I've been overthinking this drink thing. Look, I don't even want to drink today. Day after that, once again, I did drink, but I only drank one beer. I'm classy, so it's a can. And I'm, like, holding it like this. So, like, you know, I don't get it warm because I'm drinking it that slow. I'm nursing it. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm socially drinking. This is fantastic. So I had one beer, but, you know, there's two things about me that definitely make me an alcoholic. You know, number one, after a period of, you know, not drinking anything, my mind will convince me somehow, some way, someday, it'll be different, here's how, and it'll seem like a good idea, and I just have to do it. And the other thing is, the second part, once I start drinking, may not be the first day, may not be the second day, but when it hits, I'm off to the races. And I laugh about it now, but back then, man, it's embarrassing. So by the end of the week, it didn't quite get embarrassing there yet, but it was on its way. Oh, boy. I was like that girl, and, you know, there's nothing worse. And you're like, oh. And So I was off to the races by the end of the week, and I hung out with good Irish boys. If you ever want to feel really good about your drinking, hang out with Irish boys. They're like, oh, yeah, you're an alcoholic in training. And, you know, if you can – I found out that two things. Number one, if you can keep up with Irish boys, that you have a problem. Number two, they're really good at not spilling their alcohol. It's amazing. You know, they can, like, flip backwards and, like, didn't spill a drop. or my friend Matt fell asleep and he like was twisting and turning and there the beer is straight up. I was like, that's amazing. Anyway, so, you know, I started doing the things that we do. I started stepping on people. People started asking me, are you doing these things? And I'm like, oh, no. I did what any good alcoholic will do. You know, I'm going to deny it. You know, I'll admit to that, but no, not that. I would never do that. No, not me. But of course, I'm doing it all. And so things got real bad real fast. I got kicked out of there. I ended up moving into a party house. I thought a party house, I'd be safe. But there, they also criticized my drinking. I remember this guy who chronically wet his pants. Like, I had to give him a ride home once, and I put, like, a plastic bag down for him. And because I'm loving. I'm like, wait. So I'm joking about being loving, obviously, but So he was telling me how bad my drinking was. And I was like, what? Like, he was sitting there burning a hole through a styrofoam plate with a cigarette, and it landed on the floor. And he was telling me my drinking was bad. And I'm like, it was like one of those bizarro moments, but, you know, he was right. But so I ended up in the party house. The bounty hunters caught up with me at a couple different jurisdictions. The police looking for me at that time, so it wasn't smart to run. I had burned through the bridges. And so I ended up going to jail. I did everything I could to not be sober in jail, but I started hearing things that hit my heart. I started seeing number one. Well, I heard in one of the – I started going to everything positive that I could. I heard that you know, being sober is more than not putting stuff in my system, and drinking is more than just putting stuff, you know, putting stuff in my system. And it clicked with me. I'm like, oh, okay, so I got to do something in order to stay sober. And I started seeing that it was a revolving door. People are like, I'm going to stay sober, and they get out, and they're back, like, you know, a month later, a week later. One woman was back within 24 hours. We're like, woo, welcome back. You know, which you joke about, but it's really, it's insane. And, you know, they say that jail's the bottom. It's not. A person like myself gets comfortable, gets a couple businesses. Does that make me cool? No, it makes me really, really dumb. And nobody should be comfortable in jail. No one should. And I remember thinking, okay, this is going to be me for the rest of my life, and I'm okay with it. And that scared the crap out of me. And, So the day that I had to wait for a bed for a rehab, the day that I went into rehab, I'm like, all right, I'm going to try this. So I started trying it. So I was Little Miss Rehab. I know how to make things look good on the outside. So that's what I did. You know, I'm Little Miss Rehab. But it was one of those self-help mutual help programs. So they helped me. They brought me the help. And basically they told me I was full of stuff, you know, bad stuff, like crap. That's not cursing, so I think I'm all right. So they told me that, and I broke down crying. And while I was in rehab, I ended up going to a psych ward. I am an overachiever after all. So so jail, rehab, psych ward, IOP, all while I'm in rehab. And So I got this all within a year, and I love the psych ward. I love the day those doors close, and you're like, because I'm safe from me. It's fantastic. And, I got back, and I was going to IOP, and it was kind of like Humpty Dumpty. You know, it was one of those rehabs. They break you down in order to build you back up. And it was like Humpty Dumpty in the way that, you know, I had two counselors, two therapists, I don't even know what else. I had, like, the director was trying to help me. Nobody could put me back together again. And I remember being, like, slumped down in the chair of one of my groups, because it was, like, a lot of groups. And I remember, like, looking at the steps, like, when I say slumped down, like, my head was at the bottom of where the place you sit. So I was, like, slumped down in this rehab chair, and I'm like, I guess I'll try the steps. So I did get a sponsor. I'd love to tell you I went right into it, but I got a sponsor basically in name only. She wanted to get to know me before we got into the steps, and I was all right. Like I was like, okay, maybe the steps could work, but I really didn't believe it because they seem pretty, I don't know, they seem insubstantial, I guess. So I ended up, I had that for a while, and while I was in there, I found out that, they don't like felons in the healthcare field. They're like, no, 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 you can't have your x-ray license. And, you know, that was my last thing. Like, damn, ooh, if I can't make money, what's the point, you know? And I was like, I'm so happy it happened, because what ended up happening was, I started going after my recovery, the way I went after my alcohol. And I, at that time, there were these people bringing a meeting in, and, you know, there was a guy with 18 years sober. He had been through the steps as they were laid out in the big book. He sponsored people, and he was active in a home group. He was sponsoring a guy with 4 years sober. He had been through the steps, was active in a home group, and was sponsoring people. He was sponsoring a guy with 1 month sober who had been through the steps and was sponsoring a guy. And I'm like, all right, come on, you know? And I'm like taking bets on this guy. I'm like, there's no way 1 month guy is going to stay sober. So I'm taking bets on all these people in the back. I'm obviously wrong, because obviously years later, the guy with 1 month, he's still sober. He's my husband. I'm wrong. But at that time, I was like, I could see something like in their eyes. Something about them was different. So I started going to their group, and I got a sponsor, and I started going through those steps, you know. I remember I went through the first three steps with my sponsor, and she's driving me back to my rehab, and it's in Newark. And at that time, you know, it was way before the gentrification. It was at the time of the ratification, rats. And there's it smells like death and urine in the summertime. And, you know, the place where my home group was the kind of place that had, like, Christmas lights on the trees. And she's driving me back to my rehab. And for the first time in a long, long time, and after the first three steps, I felt like everything was going to be okay. And she turned to me, and she actually was pretty cool. You know, before I'd done the steps, the people in my rehab were calling me Angry Amy. They wouldn't tell me because they were, like, scared of me. And then my sponsor was Mean Maureen, so it was perfect fit. But she ended up apologizing to me later, and I'm like, to be honest with you, you know, you are a channel, because she always said the most beautiful things to me. And, you know, at that time with that drive home, she told me, she's like, Amy, that's hope. You know, when it came time for the fourth and the fifth step, you know, I was like, how many should I write down? She's like, how free do you want to be? So I wanted to be really free. So I was, like, very dramatic. Like, I remember going on, by then I was in the halfway house, and I was going on a trip, and I'm like, I'm writing my fourth step. Oh, my God, I just remembered. I was, like, sharing in a meeting when we were on the trip, and I was like, I'm on my fourth step right now, and I don't know where this is going, but, you know, I'm doing it. I totally forgot about that. That's great. So, but what ended up happening was, you know, I was pretty thorough with my first step. So when it came time for the fifth step, you know, I got the results of that thorough first step. And my sponsor, I really thought she was going to be like, oh, my God, I can't believe you. But the lady, she was, like, laying down. She fell asleep at one point. She woke back up, and she's like, wait, what did you say? And I read it again, and she's like, oh, all right, yeah, I did that too. And she was, like, vacuuming. I was like, I thought it was so, like, shocking. And I'm like, no. I was taught that, like, if it's in the dictionary, it's been done. I was like, oh, all right. You know, so there goes all that personal shame. It's gone, you know, and I remember I went home, and for the first time after I was finished with my fifth step, for the first time I was able to lay my head down on the pillow and go to sleep at night. 7 and 8, was I ready to change? Yes, I was. It wasn't until later that I have to take some action on that. Of course, God removes the defects, but, you know, I should definitely practice the opposite if I'm acting like an animal. So I had to stop acting like an animal and pray that God removes those character defects from me. I thought, like, well, I can continue doing this until God removes the defects. You know, I was ridiculous, you know. Thank God phones were like Nokia back then. You could throw them and they would not break. They'd fall apart, but they wouldn't break, you know. So I learned that the hard way, obviously, you know. And you know, 8 and 9, it was really difficult. Once again, I took a break from AA. I, like, decided I'm just going to go to one meeting a week. I found this bit, I was going to be a salesperson working, like, 12 hours a day. I was going to make lots of money. And so I started cutting back on my meetings, and basically, it was really cool because I started seeing that, you know, my alcoholism was kicking in. And it's like, you know, my alcoholism is like, you know, we were at this meeting for the new job that I had. And they're like, yeah, we have these socializing parties that you drink at. I'm like, oh, do you drink? And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, you're going to have to drink because, you know, you sell things better and make connections better. And I was like, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes, you know, they walked around, they were like street, I don't know if it's wrong to say street peddler stuff, whatever. Some of them made money. So you're like, I was like, I could picture myself like at the end of the hard day, just walking up to a bar and drinking. And, I ended up seeing, I remember coming, oh, and there was lots of different guys. It was like Baskin Robbins, and, you know, it's what we do. And I started to see, I'm like, oh, my God, look at all these flavors. And I was like, oh, I was sitting there, and I'm like in the shower. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm an alcoholic. I could see my relapse, like it was all being planned out. So I go running back to my home group, and I you start on my A step, you know, and I started feeling really good again, and you know, started really throwing myself into the program again. You know, some of my amends were really easy. People are like, oh my God, you show me the program works. You know, that was the big tough lady in rehab. And then other ones, like my mom, who's 4'11", was like, I'll believe it when I see it. Which is great, because I had to live my amends. You know, at 4 years sober, she finally saw that I was the person that I said that I wanted to be. And we have a great relationship now. I ended up, 10 and 11 didn't do a lot when I was new. 12 did a lot. I learned that, you know, helping others, I take all the stuff that I've done while I was out there, and I can use it in here, and I become so useful in here. You know, where else can you come in? And I know we're not all derelicts, but I for sure was one. So where else can you go and like, hey, I'm a derelict. Oh, I did that. Which is great when I'm helping others, because I'm like, yeah, I did that too. Yeah, it was fantastic, you know? So it becomes something, you know, so useful in here. I've had like... later on I learned that I had to do like spot check inventories and different stuff like that. I started falling back asleep in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I wasn't doing 10 and 11 and I wasn't growing. And I started cutting myself again at 4 years sober, you know, went through a bad breakup, got a new sponsor. She said, you're really sick. You have to do step 11 twice a day. And I started seeing that the fuse was lengthened, you know. I didn't become a guru, but I did, I didn't explode anymore, which was nice. And step 10, I love the 12 and 12 because it talks about in detail step 10 and 11, you know, and I read that and it was like, it was so amazing to start, you know, practicing all the steps in my life. And I got those results, and I started becoming a person that I really liked. I started becoming a woman of integrity. Because of the breakup, I ended up moving down to Florida with my family, and I was able to be the daughter that I never was. I was able to be the granddaughter that I never was. And so when my I don't know why I'm getting choked up, my grandma passed away. It's like, I think it's like a year and a half ago, I was so happy that I would spend like almost every other weekend with her, and it was like, it was amazing. So like looking back, you know, I'm so glad that I broke up with that guy. I mean, we did get married later, but so glad we broke up back then. sorry. definitely everything happens for a reason. And what I've learned in my life is, as long as you're open to it, you know, just go with the flow. You know, I was told this morning that, you know, life's not going to be happy all the time. And I get that. But, you know, that's what we have our step 10 for, you know, and that's what we have step 11 for, you know. And I've seen that God's taking care of me every bit of the way looking back. And I got to say, I'm so grateful. That's the only thing that time has given me. It's given me the experience to see that the whole time God had a plan. And I'm just so grateful for that, because there's like nothing that a fear may pop into my head, but like do the fear prayer and it's gone. And I'm like able to walk through it, like moving 3,000 miles across the country. It was like, okay, cool, fear prayer. And, you know, going to new meetings. Okay, cool, fear prayer. And there's no words to say just how amazing that is to feel and know that there's a God out there that just has me and will never let me go. And I'm just so grateful for that today. So thanks.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.